Welcome to Rising Stars, where Miriam Knight, publisher of New Consciousness Review, interviews exciting new voices in the world of progressive and transformational books, films, and ideas, who offer intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us as we celebrate the conscious awakening and explore many expressions of consciousness in action.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Miriam Knight, your host, and we have a co-host with us today, my business partner, MJ Schwader. Our guest today is Dr. Lauren Olson. He is a medical doctor, a board-certified psychiatrist in practice for more than 40 years. He's a nationally recognized expert on mature gay men, and he has spoken to groups across the country, appearing on ABC TV's Good Morning America, in addition to giving numerous national, local, and regional media interviews. He is a regular blogger for the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. He lives in Iowa with his partner of 30 years, Doug, who became his husband in 2009 after the Iowa Supreme Court sanctioned same-sex marriage. He was previously married to his wife, Lynn, and he's the proud father of two daughters and a grandfather of six. His book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, A Psychiatrist's Own Story, was published in 2011. A revised edition is coming out in April of this year, called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. Dr. Lauren Olson, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, I would like to start with the obvious question of why it took you so long to realize that you're gay. Because as both a psychiatrist and a gay man, you have a unique insight, and you gave such a fascinating explanation in your book.
Well, thank you. You know, actually trying to figure out the answer to that question was what led to writing the book, because I wondered myself how I could have missed all those clues for all those years. And I think the technical name for it in psychology terms is a defense mechanism of denial. And denial operates when a person has something that's so contrary to their belief system that they're dealing with that they just simply put it out of their consciousness. And one of the ways that I think it makes sense to understand it is if you look at a child, they believe in Santa Claus fairly easily, and then they began to see clues that don't fit, and yet they want to hang on to that belief because there's good reasons to do so. You know, there's a payoff for that. And I think eventually the facts become so overwhelming that they can no longer deny it. And it was much like that for me. It was that there were clues as I went along, but, you know, there's a lot of advantages to being a heterosexual male in our society. And I think it was consistent with my value system to be a married man with children and inconsistent to do anything else. The other issue related to that is I grew up in Nebraska. I was born in '43, so it was quite a different time in our history as well. And I didn't even know anyone who was openly gay until I was probably in my early 30s. So I didn't have any reference points for people who were living successfully as openly gay men at that time either.
MJ, do you want to hop in?
I was going to hop in there. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
I'm welcome to the program. It's great to look at your book and interview you. To give you a little background for me, I actually came out as a lesbian when I was 19. I'm 56 now. And then I came out as a transgender man 5 years ago, when I was 51. And so similar type of a thing, and that was easily one of the first questions that, especially in the lesbian community, you know, why did it take you so long to figure that out? And some of it was I was just unaware of what it meant to be transgender, even though I was in the lesbian community. And so that's part of it. And then otherwise, it was very similar to what you were saying. It's like that you know, it was hard enough coming out as a lesbian. Okay, now I'm going to take that step and go and become.
I think what you're saying, MJ, I think what you're saying is related to what I see a lot too, and that is that it seems almost like there's an epidemic of people coming out as trans now, but I don't think it's really a change in the incidence of people who are transgender, but just an awareness that it's a possibility, and mm-hmm. once people begin to see that as a possibility, then a lot of their life begins to make sense, and it fits into place with the way that they perceive their identity.
That's exactly it. And that's in that day that I realized that that's exactly the first thought I had was, well, this totally answers so many confusing points in my life. So there was that instant acceptance of it for me internally. Now, that doesn't mean it was easy to do, but there was that internal acceptance.
Yes, I think it has to be much more difficult to make that transition than to come out as someone who's interested in same-sex activity. I can't imagine how difficult that would be.
Yeah, and you brought up a term that I really liked. It was called sexual purgatory in your book. And that's really a great description of it. It's like, what is that? Because in any transition, you know, coming out as a transition, whether it's being transgender or lesbian or gay, and so there's that period of time where it's just so confusing, even though you know internally it's matching what you're doing. So that was an interesting. Can you explain that more? Sexual purgatory?
Purgatory. I think it's, in Roman Catholicism, of course, it's kind of that holding place that people go to before they either go to heaven or hell. And I think that is a pretty apt description of what that feeling is like when you're trying to decide what course your life is going to take. And so there is that feeling of, you know, am I going to heaven or am I going to hell with this whole decision-making process that I'm about to enter into. And one of the things that is a principle that comes out of economics is that when we're considering these kinds of decisions, we tend to magnify the negative and minimize the positive. And that feeling of peace that you were describing, MJ, where, once it all kind of fit into place, there's just this overwhelming sense of peace that comes over you. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible, I think, to tell anyone what that feeling is like. You know, you kind of have to experience it to know what mm-hmm. it is.
That's very true. Yeah. You were going to say something before I asked that question?
Well, I was going to say that, I had a couple of stories in my life about things that where I had sort of gender variance kinds of questions about myself. And the first one was when I was about 9, and I went out for Halloween, and I decided I was going to dress as a girl. When I was doing, the preparation and getting ready to go out, I had no sense of discomfort, but immediately when I got out into the community, I felt this terrible sense of judgment, and nobody ever said anything. I was not abused or criticized for my choice, but I just had this overwhelming sense of disapproval that what I was doing was somehow wrong. And I wasn't trying to be a girl, which is a whole different thing for someone who's trans. You know, that's what you want to be, is you want to be someone of the opposite sex. But I was seeing it as a costume. But there was obviously a social pressure that I picked up on even before I could understand what was going on. The other story related to that, which I think in some way parallels it, is when I was young, I had a problem with gynecomastia, and that's the common name for that would be man boobs. And always as a kid, I felt extremely self-conscious, and I think it was partly related to this idea that the worst thing you could be called when I was a kid was a sissy. And it was sort of like some kind of validation that there was this conflict within me about my sexuality in some way or another. And so I, as a kid, I would never go without a shirt. I was just ashamed of those. And even the coach one time called me out in front of the football team and said, "Olson, with tits like that, you should be wearing a bra." Well, it was this terrible sense of shame that I had about my body that felt like it was giving away a secret. And again, I don't want to say that this is the same kind of thing that you have experienced in your transitioning, but it was that sort of that somehow when you're faced with this, you live your life trying to censor everything about yourself that might give all that away. And that was something I couldn't censor.
And that was another point that you brought up in your book, is that whole, acceptance from within versus looking for it outside of yourself. That, for me, when I came to that realization of being transgender, there was this complete peace inside. Now, through that process of transitioning, I also realized, because I've just been finishing my own memoir, but I also realized that I spent a lot of time in my transition doing the same thing of, okay, now I have to appear as a man.
Mm-hmm.
So it came in, there was another level of acceptance that I had to come to myself in order to, feel good about it internally and externally. That the emphasis for that appearance is so in our brains for some reason, no matter who you are. So that, it's like,
yeah.
What?
Well,
I'm not there.
Well, as someone who is straight and struggling to decide what I want to be when I grow up and who I am, I can only imagine the additional burden on the two of you. Well, we'll have to pick that up when we come back. We're going into our break. We're speaking with Dr. Lauren Olson about his book, Finally Out. Stay with us and we'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I'm Miriam Knight and MJ Schwader. We're speaking with Dr. Lauren Olson about his book, Finally Out. MJ, do you have a question to kick us back in?
Well, when we were talking about that inner and outer acceptance. And Lauren, you brought up in your book about moral integrity. Can you go into more about what that means, and both to person who's gay or lesbian or transgender, but also just in everybody?
Yes, I think, you know, we have a sense of who we want to be, and we also have a sense of who we should be. And a lot of times there's inconsistencies in that. And particularly early in our life, we're really forced to accept our parents' value system. In most cases, we do it, and some of us accepted that more easily. In my case, I was a good boy. I did all the right things. I accepted the values that were given to me, and I didn't question too much. Other people rebel against them, and earlier than I did. But there needs to be an integration of that ideal person or that ideal self that we want to be with who we think we are. And when those two don't match up, there's a great sense of dissonance that goes on, and that dissonance leads to anxiety and often depression. And when we see people who are considering coming out, oftentimes they begin to think about suicide as a way of dealing with it. You know, if we look at coming out, the men and women who come out as gay have a suicide rate that's 3 times the rate of the general population. It's 9 times the rate for people who are transgender. So it's sometimes been called predicament suicide. There's a psychiatrist in Australia who's described it as being a situation where a person is really generally free of any mental disorder, and yet is faced with a predicament that seems to have no possible solution. And I'm sure many of us have been faced with different kinds of predicaments. But for me, that I never really seriously thought about suicide. But I remember when I was late 30s, when I was dealing with all this, thinking, what is the way out of this? I don't see a way out of this. You know, and a part of me wanted my wife to have a problem so that I could walk out and justify my decision to leave without accepting the responsibility for it. But there's what we need to do is to begin to integrate the person that we want to be with who we think we are, and do that in a positive way.
And that therein lies the where you need the support around you, because you know, it's very, very lonely to come to that on your own. I know that from my own experience. That was a big part of it. And interestingly, throughout my life, I did have depression. I just also had a lot of physical issues going on, the pain. So I was, it must be that, until I actually, you know, finally came to my truth, because I thought I was with my truth when I came out as a lesbian. But there was still something even deeper that I wasn't aware of. And you mentioned that, too, that, you know, we bury it a lot of times in our unconscious. It's buried there in our unconscious before something kind of awakens that.
Yes.
Now, the other thing, too, that was interesting about your book is that, you know, you came out later in life, after your 40s. Was it in your 40s?
Was it? I was right out 40 when I left home. You know, the process, of course, was going on for a while before that. What happened was that there was a time in my marriage when things weren't real solid between my wife and I, and I first introduced the idea of maybe I'll have an affair. You know, maybe that will somehow give me some sense of something that I'm missing right now, because we just weren't seeming to be able to fix what was going on between us. And once I accepted that step, then what happened was I ended up having an affair with a man. You know, and I met a guy at the gym. He was married. I was married. And I kind of thought, well, what could possibly go wrong, you know? And, of course, everything went wrong with that. Because I ended up falling in love with him. And then what happened is I had to confront how I could possibly now put what's happening to me in perspective. And initially I thought, well, perhaps I'm bisexual. And then as things went on, I decided that I was really more comfortable being gay. And I then at that point had to really get honest with myself and create that authenticity that we were talking about before, and bringing who I am with in line with who I think I want to be and who I am.
Could you explain for our listeners the difference between gay and bisexual?
Well, that's an area that has gotten me into some trouble sometimes. You know, I think the problem, as I see it, with talking about bisexuality is that, you know, our sexuality is based on sexual fantasy, sexual attraction, sexual behavior, and sexual identity. And in my mind, a person is gay, bisexual, or straight, determined by their identity. And for example, a person can have same-sex attraction and same-sex fantasy, but behave only in a heterosexual way. And there are many men who do that. I don't know numbers about women, but the numbers of men who define themselves as heterosexual but have sex exclusively with men are quite high, particularly in some communities. So that's where the confusion comes in. And so my own preference is to that we define ourselves. We attach the label. And so for me, being gay is more comfortable because I see myself as only functioning with the same sex partner. Bisexuality is someone who can be comfortable with either sex in a relationship. I think that the bisexual community right now is going through a strong transition and trying to advocate for themselves and to you know, a lot of times in the LGBT, the B and the T guy have kind of been overlooked and left out, the bisexual community is really trying to develop a strong identity for themselves within that community. But I guess just to reiterate that my belief is that we get into trouble when we try to define other people. If we say that somebody is bisexual and they may perceive themselves totally different. That creates a lot of problems, not just in terms of sexuality, but anytime we try to define another group, we tend to define them incorrectly based on our own internal stereotypes and prejudices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely, you know, there's been a big thing in the lesbian community about, if you're a straight woman having a relationship with a lesbian, then you must not be straight, you must not be heterosexual, you must be bisexual. And that is, like you say in the book, you know, that is kind of sometimes where people identify themselves as in their own coming to that realization of whether they are actually gay or lesbian, or they're really heterosexual and just having a fling or whatever it is they're having. So
yeah,
that's
what I thought I was doing.
Yeah, exactly. There's no bi transgender, or I probably would have done the same thing going through that, but
you bring up an interesting point, though, MJ, and that is that, you know, that just be that transgenders can be gay, straight, bisexual. You know, that our gender and our sexual orientation are not at all consistent. So, one of the things that I hear frequently is that confusion about someone who has made the transition from male to female, or the reverse, and then at that point, after they have transitioned, has an attraction to someone of the same sex. And then it's kind of like, why did you bother? You know, if you're going to be interested in a woman, why would you change your sexual or your gender identity to being a woman too? You know, there's a lot of confusion that comes up around that topic.
truly. And even in the bathroom, the whole bathroom debate that's going on, which is so ironic because that was one of the worst things that ever happened to me when I was a lesbian, was going into a female bathroom, because I was always called sir. I always, you know, looked like a man.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I can't win. Now I'm transgender. I still look in the bathroom. That is a big surprise for a lot of people. It was for me even when I started to transition, was that your sexual preferences are different than your gender orientation. So it's very very interesting. I think one of the things that I actually appreciated was somebody just asked me a couple of days ago whether I would have transitioned earlier in my life had I known. And I would have. It would have been a totally different experience. And that's one of the things that your book really goes into, is coming out as gay later in life. You know, what is that, and how different that is compared to earlier? For a lot of reasons, there's a lot of difference. Can you talk about that just a little bit? About that?
Well, I think, for me, a lot of it had to do with professionally and socially, but particularly in terms of being a father and committed in a marriage. And you know, there were so many things related that to coming out that I was going to have to, at least I thought I was going to have to give up. And so there are so many decisions that relate to sacrificing all those relationships, which were based on a phony reality, but at the same time, that was there. And I think the thing that I feared most was, and I've heard this from so many other men who've come out later in life, is, you know, most of us, or at least most that I know, are very committed fathers, and our relationship with our children was very important, and many of us have been sort of more engaged in raising our kids than many heterosexual men. I lost my father when I was very young, and so I always wanted to be the best father I could possibly be. And so that decision of sort of betraying myself and giving up what I had idealized as the father that I never had, being that kind of person, was a painful, painful process for me. And I think that there are other things, you know, professionally I'd established myself as a heterosexual male and all those things, but they all paled in comparison to that giving up or feeling like I was going to give up my relationship with my children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we got a break coming up, so we'll wait on that.
Okay.
Indeed, we're speaking with Dr. Lauren Olson about his book, Finally Out. This is Miriam Knight and my co-host, MJ Schwader. We'll be right back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Yeah. Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your family has a fire escape plan, and they practice it twice a year. One important thing to practice is get low and go. If you see or smell smoke, it's important to get low and go. Protect your family from fire. For more information, visit sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
Welcome back. I'm Miriam Knight, and we're speaking with Dr. Lauren Olson, and my co-host is MJ Schwader. I wanted to refer to something you said in your introduction where you were holding off or resisting going to school on the, I think it was in New York on the East Coast, because you instinctively felt that perhaps an urban environment would be more enticing to what you were trying to suppress. Both you and MJ grew up in the sort of rural heartland, the conservative heartland of the country. Do you think your experience might have been very different if you had been on either coast?
I think so, Miriam. It's hard to know that, but you know, there were several times when I sort of made a step in that direction and then pulled back. And one of those exactly was that I was beginning to look for places to go after medical school to practice, and I considered New York, Chicago, St. Louis, and New Orleans. You know, certainly not the heart of the Bible Belt in the terms of conservative religious beliefs, but and I think it was all operating outside of my awareness. I had no idea. But even when I was in high school, I didn't like the fact that I was in a very, very small school, and I didn't have the opportunity to study English literature and drama and participate in those kinds of things, which were different. There was a very narrow focus. And when I went to the university, I was going to go and audition for plays, but I pulled back from that as well. And, you know, all those things which were things which might have taken me into the arena of a more diverse community. And when I was in medical school, we had a class reunion a few years ago, and I came out to some of my classmates who were there, and I said, you know, when we were in Omaha in medical school, were there any gay bars? None of us knew. And, of course, now I know that there were indeed, but at that time, which would have been in the mid-60s, if we had gone to a gay bar and been caught there, we would have been thrown out of medical school. And, and you know, that was the reality of the time that we lived in, that we would have been considered pathologic and deviant and therefore not suitable to be physicians. So there were not only my internal conflict about this, but there was a great deal of social pressure to conform to the role. And, of course, in the 50s when I was growing up, that was the time of the McCarthy hearings. And even though I wasn't really aware of all that was going on, but certainly my parents were, and the community was aware of the purging of the government of communists and homosexuals because of fears that they were going to undermine the government. So I know that those things were happening, and when I began to write the book, I went back. One of the things I wanted to do was say, you know, what was my life really like growing up, and what were some of the reasons externally that were pushing me in this direction. I didn't want to think that it was just my stupidity that led to not being able to figure this out. But there were a lot of social pressures to conform. And if there was ever any discussion of homosexuality, I never heard it, you know. The only word I knew when I was in a kid was hermaphrodite, you know, and that was, and of course, as a kid, you look up definitions in the dictionary of sexuality because you're trying to explore it, and that was the only thing I had ever read. But a long answer to your question, but yes, I think had I made that step, it might have been different. When just before I was about to get married. I actually went to St. Louis with my brother, and I went into an antique store, and he was in a wheelchair, so he couldn't go in. And there was a young, very attractive young man who was managing the store, and he came over and talked to me for a while. And he had his thumb in his pocket, you know, and all of a sudden he kind of fanned out his fingers over my crotch. And my initial response was, how clumsy of him, you know. I had no clue what was going on. And then I walked away, and he came and talked to me again. He said, you know, we're having a party tonight. Maybe you should come. And he touched me again, and I still didn't quite get it. And then finally the third time it happened, I was like, oh, my God, you know. And of course, my reaction was to blame him for the whole thing. But now with a different set of eyes, I can see that there were clues that I was probably giving off all along about my same-sex interest that I wasn't recognizing. I mean, that was a particularly dramatic experience with that, but there were other times when similar kinds of things happened when I just would not let that my own personal responsibility in that come to the surface. And I was very angry, and I was about to be married when this happened, and it was really quite overwhelming at the time.
Must have been terribly
disappointing. I have to say too, I grew up in South Dakota, just up the road from you, and I had the realization that something was not right, but like you said, nobody ever talked about it. There was not a nobody ever that I knew was gay or lesbian. I never heard the word homosexual until I was maybe 11 or 12 years old. You know, so there was this, but there was this internal sense, and I think that was the question I was going to ask you before the break. You know, there's an internal sense all along that something wasn't adding up, that something wasn't right, even without language around it, and to the point of it was not to be talked about. There was both mm-hmm. that internal conflict, but there was an external feeling of not being safe if I talked about this, no matter what. you know, when I was 11, I finally, you know, came home from a football game one night when, you know, my best girlfriend, my brother wanted to date her. And I remember thinking, well, I want to do that. You know, and why can he do that? I can't do that. And I get out of the car and I'm like, well, what's going on? You know, I must be really different. But I knew enough not to talk about it, too. I knew it wasn't safe to do that. You know, so and the same with being a boy. You know, I asked my mom, I remember many times when I was 3 or 4 or 5 years old saying, why, you know, why isn't my penis going to grow? You know, so, you know, I'm a boy. Why isn't this happening? You know, so you get truly, I mean, I remember very clearly several times saying that I didn't even know what a penis was. I don't want one of those things my brother has. It was important, but I didn't know why. And so, I had penis envy, but it was a different kind of penis envy. But yeah, we had that, you know, that. But I always knew from that very early age that I also had a sense that I wasn't going to be able to stay there, that somehow I was going to have to find myself somewhere else, find other people like me too, but really find myself somewhere else. And that was a question I had for you. You know, because you came out later in life, do you feel like that might be an easier thing to do, or was it? In terms of just your not the external but the internal part of you, the spiritual part of you, because of your life experience, do you feel that for yourself, and would that be something that's kind of in a lot?
I think you brought up a really interesting point, MJ, when you talked about, you know, we didn't have the words to describe what was going on, and that was definitely the case for me. That, you know, there was this vague sense of, and we talk about it a lot, a sense of difference, but you know, and also just you know that you shouldn't talk about it, and that isolation, of course, is what gets many of us, and it becomes a real problem. And even though I didn't know that I was looking for other people like me, I thought that I was probably the only one who was like this. And of course, you don't know that because you don't validate it with anybody else. But there was always this sense that, you know, there is another world out there that I want to be a part of, but I don't really know what it is yet. And I think that was partly what was driving me to do that. Initially, when I took my first steps into same-sex activity, the first time I had sex with a man happened in New York City, and it was with somebody who was very stereotypically gay, and so I had it all figured out. It was not a good experience for me, and it was I don't know how to say it in any other way except it was less satisfying than masturbating in many ways. I was with somebody that I wasn't really particularly attracted to. There was no sense of really emotionally connecting with him in any way. And then there was just all this shame and guilt that went along with it. So that experience, that first adult same-sex experience, tended to validate the fact that I wasn't really gay, you know, because it was not what I had expected at all. And so I didn't do anything more other than just sort of a curiosity, a voyeuristic kind of some porn and magazines, more magazines and stuff at that time. But I really didn't feel comfortable. And I was kind of surprised. It was a little bit like when I was 40 and had come out, I went to Halloween. I thought I had to dress up as a woman, and just because that's what gay people did, you know, on Halloween, and I went to the Salvation Army and got a dress, and I got a wig, and you got the fingernails and everything, and I put all this stuff on. I looked in the mirror. I looked just like my mother, you know. And I thought, you
know, welcome to the club.
This is not the look I was going for, you know. And you know, it was one of those things where, you know, the whole night my fingernails kept falling off. You know, I couldn't get into to my panties to get my junk out to pee. You know.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to go to break. We will be right back.
Bringing you the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Today, my new dad threw a barbecue.
I burnt everything.
And then we played catch.
I broke Mr. Lewis's window. And then, somehow, my hand.
My hand! And then my dad even let me drive his car.
The hospital's on the right!
It was a rough day.
It was a great day.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You know, as you were speaking about coming out, I was thinking that there are a lot of parallels between people who are coming out as intuitives of one form or another, psychics. MJ, you have a double whammy, being both intuitive and gay or trans. And this seems to be in the air, in the consciousness. There's a conscious awakening about who we really are. There's a conscious seeking to know who we really are. And do you think this is just kind of pushing against the barriers that surround us, seeking a new kind of spiritual and emotional freedom?
Are you asking me or are you asking Lauren that?
Yeah, jump in. Let's start with Lauren.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Okay. Well,
I'll let you go first, Lauren.
My training course has been very traditional, but at the same time, when we talk about things like empathy, which is, I think, a big part of the healing in psychiatry, is there are things which allow us to connect with other people, to sense what's going on, and so. I think many of the things that you talk about are probably very consistent with the ways that I see, but we are using different labels to describe some of the same phenomenon. And MJ, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting because actually my book is about that topic, Miriam. You know, I think the journey, and this is, I think, where personally for me, having transitioned at this point in my life, I see it a lot differently. I see my life a lot differently. You know, looking back and I say, okay, there were breadcrumbs along the way all the time that led me on this journey to finding myself. Now, it's a journey we all take in our lives. Mine happens to be because I'm transgender and I went through all these things with that and being lesbian. But we all have that journey of really coming to that moral integrity that I asked Lauren about earlier, that we are so, in particular in this society, we are so tuned into appearances. I mean, it's in everything we do is how do we appear? And so if that appearance, whatever that appearance is, whether it's sexual or gender or anything else in your life, doesn't match up, then that's where the conflicts are and that's where you can get off track. Whether it's, you know, okay, I'm going to go attempt suicide or I'm going to lie to people or, you know, you start to make choices based on the fact that you have to hide this. And then that hiding and that not being in alignment with yourself, your world, you know, if you go back to the law of attraction, for example, you know, if you're lying to yourself, even if you don't know that, what are you creating in the external by that energy? So there's that piece of it. And so, you know, getting back to your question, Miriam, about being an intuitive and coming out, I think I think part of me searching and finding shamanism, which is what I ended up studying, studying channeling and studying mediumship and things like that, it's almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg, is did I enhance my intuitive abilities because of my journey or did the intuition set me on that journey or both? And so, and I explore that a lot in the book, in my memoir, because it just seems like there were things along the way that always pointed me in this direction. I just wasn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. So if I wasn't paying attention to that, what else wasn't I paying attention to? And so it's...
I think one of the things... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, no, go for it.
One of the things that I've been interested in as I've gotten older is... what I've talked about is the opportunities of aging. And one of the things that makes it easier as we get older is we do care a lot less about what other people think, or most of us do, and there's a sense that, we don't have enough time left to be worried too much about what other people think. I'll be 74 this month, and you know, I'm not going to waste my time trying to impress other people at this point. You know, I'm going to be who I am, and you deal with it or you don't deal with it, but I'm not going to try and change my life to satisfy other people in any way. And I spent a lot of my early life doing that, and I felt like if I made too many sacrifices, that wasn't one of those that I made. But I do think there's a lot of people who don't understand psychiatry and mental health seem to not have the capacity to resonate emotionally with other people, we could talk about that in terms of our politics right now, but I think, you know, you may describe it in terms of energy levels, and I might describe it in terms of empathy or compassion, but I think those are some of the things that we share in common.
Mm-hmm. What would you say has been the greatest help to you in creating your new life? And what advice would you give to others who are struggling at this stage in their life?
Well, I think the most important thing is something that MJ referred to earlier in talking about finding a world where you're accepted. Shame doesn't survive in a world where you feel accepted by other people. And so much of the time, as we have gone through the struggle, we felt so isolated and alone, and maybe like we're the only other person, or we don't know who to whom to reach out to, or we're too ashamed to talk with someone else about it. But I think the critical first step is coming to some sense of peace within yourself, and then finding at least one other person that you can sort of share this with, that you trust will accept your story, even though they might not understand it, and then to begin to broaden that community. When I first began to come out, I went to a support group for gay fathers, and it was a pretty profound experience for me, because I walked into this group of men who were a very diverse group of men, but there was a sense of peace immediately that I was accepted, and that, you know, whatever differences we might have in terms of what we were interested in, or our lives, or our ages, or whatever it was that we were different about, we all had some sense of being accepted. And that was probably one of the most important steps that I took. It really made me feel normal. And one of the things that I talk about sometimes is that when I was living a life where I thought I was heterosexual, I never felt like I had a great sense of intimacy with other men. And a lot of it had to do with what MJ was talking about before, that you censor everything, you hold back, you don't disclose yourself. And so there was always kind of this barrier in connecting with other men. Even though I shared a lot of their interests, it was as if I had to isolate myself. Once I got past that, I feel, after having come out, I have much better relationships with other men, and feel much more comfortable in sharing myself in ways that I never did. And a lot of that loneliness, I think, disappeared because it was self-imposed. I was making myself isolated because I didn't want to give away a secret that I didn't even know I had.
Mm-hmm. For me, the irony. There's several ironies that happened. One was that I actually had less acceptance in the lesbian community, which is ironic to me because, you know, they're looking for acceptance of being lesbian, but many in my age group, younger it's different, but in my age group, a lot of lesbians left my life. They were like, okay, I'm not comfortable with that. And so that was a fascinating thing. There is a group, I live in Portland, Oregon, so they're there's a large population of transgender individuals here, and so there are support groups, et cetera, for me to meet other people. But it's been a very lonely process, and some of that is also because after having been a lesbian for 40 years and now being a transgender, I was never in the heterosexual world. So now I've lost the lesbian world, and so now there's that other loneliness of just being, okay. And you know, going through a process like this is going to have a lot of grief. So that's another reason why a lot of people don't step in and you know, come out and or transition, et cetera, is because there's a lot of loss, you know.
There's
a tremendous amount of loss, not just loneliness, but then you're also dealing with the grief of that loss. And so that's been a big part. Another part for me was I lived in the sisterhood for 50 years. Now, and I never was in the brotherhood, so there's that loss. So there's a lot of different layers of it. You know, it's like, okay, where,
yeah,
who am I? And it just, you know, and I think that's, again, where my life experience has served me, because I have had grief in the past, and I have, you know, gone through periods of loneliness, et cetera. So, you know, I understand that better. And I was able to get through it because I had that internal acceptance of myself. So that was
your spirituality a help?
Oh, absolutely. It was essential. As soon as, you know, the more I knew about myself, which I think, you know, spirituality to me is my own spirit. You know, I thought for many years I was chasing spirituality and religion or belief systems or whatever. And what being transgender has shown me very clearly is I was chasing after my own spirit. You know, I was just always looking for that piece that was missing that I didn't understand was there all the time. I just hadn't recognized it.
And that's such a universal quest, absolutely. And I want to give Dr. Olson the last word.
Sure. Or that time.
Well, is it already? It's gone by quickly. I just think that I found a lot of joy in getting older, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things that we is that pain is going to enter all of our lives in some ways, like the ways that you were talking about, MJ, but we're all going to experience that. But, you know, suffering is not an obligation. You know, it depends on how we deal with that suffering, that and that pain and loss, that makes the difference.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, that seems to be it for today. We could go on for a long time. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Lauren Olson, for being with us today. And do get his book coming out April 1st called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. I'm Miriam Knight and MJ Schwader for New Consciousness Review and Happy Guide. Come join us next week. And in the meantime, have a wonderful week. Many blessings. Goodbye.